day is in a crucial stage. It's not because of foreign wars we wage. It's more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned UN. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Dangerous ones will not turn in their guns. All the unions always ask for more. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all of the usual caveats, of course. It is, of course, a very, very cold day for the majority of the country. Some places colder than others, but pretty cold, relatively speaking, no matter where you are. Right here in East Tennessee, we have barely squeaked above freezing today. For just a couple of hours, and now we're plummeting back down into the tens, possibly into single digits, depending. We're missing a lot of the weather that's a little further south, though. Places in Georgia and then across Smoky Mountains here over in South and North Carolina are getting snow, and all we got was just bitter cold. So I'm a little disappointed. Of course, as bitter cold as that is for us East Tennesseans, I know a lot of places further west and further north are a whole lot colder. So I feel silly complaining about it, so I'm trying not to complain about it, knowing a lot of folks are a lot worse off. But I will make the caveat that being down here in the South, we're a lot less accustomed to it than some of you folks out west and up north who have it on a regular basis. So please understand that 20s here is the equivalent of negative teens where some of you guys are, which strangely enough is about where a lot of you have been. So it is a new year. This is the first broadcast of the new year, and I've already had a technical delay. Nothing to do with BTR, and really not much to do with me, other than the fact that I got an emergency call to go help a friend who was stuck again because of the weather. Their battery died, had to go help them out real quick, and then got held up trying to get back. So for those of you who did try to tune in earlier, I do apologize for missing out at the beginning. I hope that you'll swing back around and catch the rest of the show live. And for those of you who do check the archives and see that there was a broadcast, if you've already checked and don't come back, again, humble apologies. What kind of a guy would I be if a friend called needing help and I didn't answer that call? I went and did that, and I rushed back as quick as I could to get here, and here I am. So let's get into the business of the talk show, shall we? All right, so we talk politics, and I've been kind of meandering just on the outskirts of politics the last few broadcasts, kind of in the holiday spirit, but not quite in the holiday spirit, I guess. It didn't really get into the Christmas songs that I normally play. Didn't get really much of the spirit with the stories. But, you know, I've, in years gone by, on before Christmas, I would be bringing you good news stories. I've done that every year until this year. And nothing particularly special about New Year's Eve other than some of the stuff that was going on. So I feel like I'm just not myself. And here I am. I was planning to kick back into the swing of things, get back to the regular schedule today because, you know, it's been kind of hectic, hit or miss. Holiday seasons usually are. But we'll get to it. The news is not slowing down, though. The news never really slowed down. Some of the outlets didn't do a very good job of reporting, but we've got a lot of stuff going on. Of course, some of the bigger items that folks were talking about, the two really hot topics today. Hot topic number one, of course, is whose button is bigger? According to Donald Trump, his is, and it got kind of messy from there. Obviously, I'm talking about Kim Jong-un's New Year's address to North Korea, and his essentially what amounts to a State of the Union address for Korea, or North Korea anyway. He basically made an obvious and open threat against the United States. Not a smart move, not in particularly, but even less so given that Donald J. Trump happens to be president of the United States right now. And of course, Donald is not going to just sit back and let little Kim say crap like that without responding. Unfortunately, he took to Twitter. Enunciation is important on the radio, Tim. Unfortunately, as has been the case in the past, President Trump took to Twitter. See, that's better. Better enunciation right off the bat. And basically said, hey, guys, guess what? Please, please let Mr. Little Kim know that I have a button too, and that mine's bigger and better and shinier, and mine actually will work. Okay, well, that's, I'm obviously paraphrasing at this point, but you know, none of this is particularly unpredictable. So why did this become a news issue? Well, The media is going to take any chance it can to try and discredit President Trump. That's what they do. They're going to take any opportunity they can to try and make President Trump look like a buffoon or a blowhard or dangerous, mentally unfit. And that's exactly what they did. They jumped all over it. I mean, you would probably expect the American media to kind of back the U.S. president when he's simply responding to an obvious and overt threat against the country. I mean, that's what it was. But no, we get this little bit of a nuclear standoff thing going on, and the mainstream media, at least the majority of the American media, seems to be in Kim Jong-un's corner on this one. So let me break it down in simpler terms. A crazed dictator of a violent autocracy declares that he has a button controlling nuclear weapons on his desk. The U.S. media just yawns. Like, oh, okay, whatever. Yay, Kim Jong-un, way to go. Then President Trump warns the nutball that he also has a nuclear button, a bigger and a more powerful arsenal, and the American mainstream media loses its mind. Now, like I said, in Kim Jong-un's New Year's address, he boasted that he has a nuclear button always on his desk. He's warning that the entire American mainland is within range of his country's missiles now. And, you know, we've been talking about this as this testing went on. We've had guests on to talk about. We have discussed the real reason why we should not just sit back and tolerate North Korea working on and developing their ICBM missile technology. We do not know how far they have gotten with their technology for trying to miniaturize their nuclear warheads. So as far as we know at this point, they may very well have nuclear weapons that they could put on one of these ICBMs. Their ICBMs still, they're not exactly foolproof yet. I'm not shaking in my boots. I'm not concerned, and I don't think you should be overly concerned either, in so much as thinking there could be a hail of nuclear firestorm coming down on our heads at any second. Now, that is not the same thing as to say we shouldn't be concerned about North Korea developing the weapons. We should. We should be very concerned because we do not know how much of his own press Kim Jong-un believes. What we do know is that he has been told since he was a tiny little boy that his entire family are God kings, or a reasonable equivalent. They believe themselves to be the same as the pharaohs of ancient Egypt. They believe themselves to be undefeatable. And while the patriarch of the family certainly knew better when he chose to begin this myth, chose to begin this story that they pushed upon the North Korean people to try and browbeat them down into their complete and total acquiescence to whatever the Kim family desired, then his son carried that myth further. And now Kim Jong-un carries that myth yet even further. The question is, does he actually believe it the way some North Koreans actually believe it? I mean, you grow up hearing this over and over again. It's not much different than growing up in an Islamic nation and believing that Allah will reward you for blowing yourself up. We know it's dangerous. We know it's a thought process that doesn't stand up to scrutiny, but we also know there's a lot of people that simply don't utilize critical thinking. They simply don't hold these ideas up to scrutiny. So, does Kim Jong-un actually believe his own hype? Does he believe his own press? Does he believe what his grandfather and his father has been telling him and the whole of North Korea for decades now? Does he believe it? It's possible he could. That's what makes him dangerous. That's what makes him a nutball. Every indication we have is that he may actually believe it. So we should be concerned at that point. We should be concerned that this is a real threat, that if Kim Jong-un was to move forward and continue to develop these weapons, perhaps even already has developed these weapons to a point that parts of the United States, other than just the closest ones in the Pacific, if he actually can hit the mainland at this point, we need to be prepared to take steps to stop the threat. This is not about worrying about international concerns. This is about worrying about the lives of innocent American citizens. I mean, sure, you could make the argument that if all he can hit is California and Oregon and Washington State, there's not that many innocent American lives would be missing. But that's not the point. Excuse me. Obviously, I'm joking. Look, I don't care how many leftists and how many undeniably pickle-minded snowflakes live in these states. They're still American citizens, and they're worthy of being protected. At the end of the day, President Trump simply made a statement in response. And on the one hand, you know, I'm not a rah-rah sis boom ba cheerleader for President Trump. What I am is a cheerleader for America. When Donald Trump does something good, I'll say he's done something good. When Donald Trump does something that's not so good, I'll say it was not so good. He's been doing a fairly balanced job. He's done more good than bad, but this is one of those occasions where he kind of did both at the same time, because it is good that a world leader is ready to stand up and defend his people and not back down from another world leader who's making obvious and overt threats, period. On the other hand, doing it on Twitter and doing it in such a sophomoric, well, shoot, I don't even know that it's fair to call that a sophomoric move. I mean, this is like a third grade playground move. Oh, I've got one too. That part is not so good. I would prefer that he did it in a more presidential fashion, I guess. Not that Donald Trump was ever elected to be presidential. He was there to set Washington on his head. And I think he's doing a fairly good job of that. But at the end of the day, this still comes down to, why does the mainstream media not understand that they are doing more harm than good when they make these attacks? Well, they understand that they're trying to harm President Trump. They do not seem to understand that they harm the nation as a whole, and they even weaken their own positions when they make statements like this. So Kim Jong-un, he's made his threats. He can hit the entire country here. Like I said, President Trump, not the kind of person to just take these words lightly, responded saying, and I quote, I paraphrased earlier, here's the actual tweet. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I, too, have a nuclear button, but it's a much bigger and more powerful one than his, and my button works. Okay, so why does the American media lose their mind? Because it's their chance. Donald Trump is threatening a world leader. Donald Trump is threatening to engage in nuclear war. Donald Trump is such a bad, bad man, whom they loved when he wasn't running for president, when he wasn't claiming to be a Republican. Now, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, I'm not sure how far back would you have to go before you could actually legitimately expect the American news media to back the American president. I mean, if this was Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama who had said this, it would be the greatest, strongest act of presidential courage ever. But it's not Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama, is it? It's the guy they hate, because he's not giving money to them anymore. It's the guy they hate because he's not acquiescing to Democratic policies, because he's not making contributions to Planned Parenthood anymore. Today, this morning, on Morning Joe on MSNBC, you got Joe Scarborough and Mike Barinski, along with a couple of other panelists, basically running the typical hate-filled show. And they went nuclear themselves, not on Kim's declaration, but on Trump's response. You had John Hillerman, I believe it was, who literally said that Trump must be crazy, like clinically insane. He said, quote, he is not merely being cavalier with a threat about nuclear war. He's being cavalier in a way that makes him seem demented and deranged. Anybody who threatened this cavalierly would be roundly condemned by all serious people of both parties. CNN actually went further and said something not that dissimilar from what certain late-night talk show hosts had said, basically insinuating that the fact that Donald Trump talked about his button being bigger was a case of penis envy. I mean, they used the opportunity to point out the fact that Donald Trump has been obsessed with everything being bigger. I've got the biggest buildings. I've got the biggest golf course. I've got the biggest cars. I've got the biggest this. I've got the biggest that. I've got the biggest sign with my name on it. That's how Trump has done his branding in the past. And love him or hate him as a business person, few people have been as successful, particularly in the line of business he chose, in the effort to brand both his company and himself. If it wasn't for his success in branding, then you can make legitimate arguments about how successful the businesses he actually runs have been. He's had some successes. He's had some failures. He's had some middle-of-the-road stuff that it'd be hard to really quantify as one or the other. He's put his hand in a lot of different pies. He's tried a lot of different things. At the end of the day, real estate development is what he is best at when it comes to his business, when it comes to what he did before he entered politics. Excuse me. He understands that when you are a developer in New York State, then it pays for people to think of you as being the biggest name. And that's the one thought that has followed him throughout. So naturally, the media wants to point all these things out and attach it to some of their own demented ideas. This is not a man who's going through a midlife crisis. This is a man who decided to do what he could to correct the path that this great republic was on. And for better or for worse, I have no questions that he is doing what he believes to be the right thing. And for the most part, he has done well. I also believe that he is a man who is flawed. He has an ego much larger than most people that we meet in an average day-to-day operation. But as I have pointed out in the past, egos are common among successful people. It is that ego that prevents people from just believing that, oh, I'm just another person. Why should I be any better? Why should I be anything other than everyone else? It's that ego. And what is it that makes me think that I can get behind a microphone and talk to you people and expect you to listen and take me seriously, or at least agree with some of what I say and take the time to disagree with some of what I say, if there's not some ego involved? I may be the least egotistical egomaniac that you'll meet, but there does take a certain amount of ego to do this. It takes even a much larger amount of ego to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or even just go into business for yourself, because you have to be willing to believe that you can do whatever it is you've chosen to do better than what other people have done. Otherwise, why bother? If you don't think that you can get your point, get your business to a point of profitability, which requires you taking market share away from someone else, unless you're fortunate enough to have the brand new, newest it thing that no one else has yet, then folks are going to be chasing after you to try and take your market share away, but that's another story. But if you're going into a business that's already existed, you have to believe you have something no one else has. And I'll go you one further than that. If you're going to be an office holder at the level of senator or higher, in fact, I'd say there's a good amount of ego involved with being in the House, but once you think that you're entitled to a Senate seat, you have developed a level of ego that goes beyond that of most business people. But to become the president, or at least to want to run for president, you have to have ego. Ego's not a bad thing necessarily. Sure, I mean, you can make you act like a jerk sometimes if you don't know how to control your ego. But having an ego isn't necessarily a bad thing. Just like being greedy sometimes isn't necessarily a bad thing. There are certainly times where it is. But it's also about the ability to motivate yourself. Sometimes ego, sometimes greed are simply tools people use to motivate themselves. And without motivation, there's no innovation. Just checking in on the chat room. See a lot of folks in here tonight. Thanks, guys, for being here. A special thanks to Annie, who doesn't often get in to join us. Happy to see you here. Southern Sense Annie Ubellis. Of course, Boyd the Alaskan is here. Kel, my dear friend from Canada, the Red Fox blogger. Scott Game is back in the house as well. Also from Canada, Gary. Freedom Quest, EJ, don't think I've seen you in the chat room here before, but so welcome. Of course, we got Doc in here as well, and Alaskan Child of God. So the Canadian regulars and the Alaskan regulars are all in the house. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you guys here with me tonight. Always fun. Eliza Jane, EJ equals Eliza Jane. Okay. So Freedom Quest, Elijah Jane. Welcome. All right. So anyway, it's the thing that is infuriating about this circumstance isn't the fact that Donald Trump has done this once again. You know, he's took to Twitter and he's ruffled the feathers of the mainstream media. But what's asinine about the whole thing is the simple fact that the majority of the mainstream media, including some folks over at Fox, take this opportunity to once again attack Donald Trump, accusing him of all kinds of mental and physical discrepancies. Mental and physical shortcomings. What are you trying to compensate for, Mr. President, saying your button is bigger? You know, is it so wrong of me to expect journalism to exist somewhere in a place that claims to be a news agency? Is it too much for me to expect that journalism should actually exist in some place that claims to hire, to employ journalists? I mean, I constantly get attacked. It's been a little while now, but for a while, especially when the show here was really hot and was getting some attention from some folks that are outside of the regulars. Got a lot of flack about how I wasn't a very good journalist. And like I've said dozens of times, I'm not a journalist. Although I have probably done more legitimate journalism than a lot of the guys that you're going to see over at CNN or MSNBC from their 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock time blocks, for any of you who have the stomach and can stand to watch it. But I'm a commentator. Plain and simple. I come from a place of bias. I don't hide my bias. I don't pretend not to have a bias. I am conservative. I'm a fiscal conservative, and I am primarily a fairly social conservative as well. There's a couple of places where I don't fit in so well as just calling me a straight up social conservative. But all of us are a little different. And the great thing about everybody who's in the chat room right now, who's been here before, is that you understand, I don't expect you to agree with me 100% of the time. And because I am not so egotistical as to claim that I am always 100% right and that there is no middle ground and that we can't get along if we agree 50% of the time, we should be able to get along. If we agree 10% of the time, we should be able to work together on 10% of the things that we agree on. And then the rest of the time, we can disagree. We do not have to be enemies. We do not have to be, well, we don't have to be like Mr. Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon today made himself an enemy of many people who support Donald Trump. When the story broke and then it hit the high notes everywhere and people just can't help but talk about Steve Bannon attacking the Trump White House, said the actions that took place, the meeting between Trump Jr. and the Russians was treasonous. He's even gotten pushback from other higher-ups at Breitbart. Now, I, for one, have never been a big Steve Bannon fan, period. And regular listeners, you've heard me talk about this before. I hate what he did to Breitbart about the time Donald Trump got the nomination. I think Andrew Breitbart would probably, if he has any idea what happened this election cycle that just passed, he'd be rolling over in his grave. Andrew Breitbart was the man when it came to the idea, the notion of citizen journalism, of taking it upon yourself to find the truth and get the truth out. Stop expecting media to do it, because it's not going to happen. Andrew Breitbart died under mysterious circumstances because well, they're mysterious. But most of us are fairly certain he was killed because of what he was doing with Breitbart. He was ruffling feathers and he was not accepting false narratives. Steve Bannon took Breitbart and going into this election cycle just went all in for Trump. So every story that painted Trump in a good way, well, they ran with and they pushed it and promoted it and acted like that's the gospel. And any story that came along that put the least little bit of an off light, a question mark towards the character or leadership abilities of Donald Trump, those stories were they were buried, they were ignored, or they were intentionally countered with stories that said just the opposite, whether they could prove it or not. Breitbart became less responsible journalism and more political operative. I don't know, for those of you who maybe have been listeners to the show for a long time now and have been following me on social media, you know that I share a lot of the stories that I plan on talking about, and several of them I don't get to. But the stories I would like to talk about, you'll find on the Facebook page for the show. And lots of times you'll find it in my personal timeline too. In the early days, and even before I started the show, I would share a lot of Breitbart links. You're going to be hard-pressed to find Breitbart links now. Every now and then, I will use one, but usually I'm using the Daily Caller or the Daily Wire. They've got good writers over there, and they still tend to try and be relatively unbiased as far as reporting facts. There's still a conservative slant to the purpose. It's not completely unbiased, but you know, I do believe as an individual that we can have a bias and still expect and face the truth. Conservatives probably more than any liberal has ever had to, and conservatives certainly more than any leftist has, we've had to deal with truth that has occasionally flown in the face of what we would like to be true. But because we're realists, because we deal with facts, because we deal with logic, we accept truth, even when it's not a happy truth. And we move on. We face dangerous times. But they're made even more dangerous when everyone wants to weaponize everything and keep turning everyone against one another. What Steve Bannon is doing right now is, it seems like sour grapes. It looks like he's lashing out and like he's trying to weaponize Breitbart again, only for his personal gain instead of for the gains of the Donald Trump presidency. Breitbart should not be weaponized. Breitbart should be what Andrew built, what Andrew worked hard to create. Citizen journalism. So why can't the mainstream media back the president, at least when it comes to an overt open threat? Because that's too much like backing the president about anything. They can't accept that Donald Trump could be right even one time, or they have to pretend like they've been wrong the whole time. I don't understand. All right, ladies and gentlemen, going to take a quick break right now. Going to play the Edwards Notebook and then the Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. And then we'll get back at it. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate you all being, and I will be right back.
President Trump has directed the United States to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, despite what the Dragon Media and others may proclaim. Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, the city of Jerusalem was first designated Israel's capital over 3,000 years ago by King David, as described in 2 Samuel in the Bible. Following King David, his son Solomon built the Holy Temple and installed the Ark of the Covenant there. Ever since the days of King David, the Jews have faced Jerusalem in their daily prayers. It is the center of Jewish faith and the core of Jewish history, which predates by over a millennium the Islamic persuasion. Jerusalem is where the Knesset governing body is housed, and it doesn't make sense for the United States to maintain its embassy 60 miles away in Tel Aviv. I believe that despite the violent protests and the numerous nations around the world who have denounced President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, it will ultimately bode well for both the United States and Israel. After all, Israel is a sovereign nation with the right to choose its capital, and likewise, the U.S. is a sovereign nation with the right to choose where to place our U.S. embassies. God bless both Israel and the United States of America. I'm Ron Edwards.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
This is Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. The holiday season can be very difficult for a lot of people, especially veterans. They may be alone or estranged from their families. Here's your Veterans Tip of the Day. If you don't belong to a veteran service organization like the American Legion or the Disabled Veterans or Veterans of Foreign War, join it. You'll meet new friends, and next time, your holiday season will be full of cheer. This has been Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. Dan Perkins here for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your Veterans Tip of the Day. Did you know that the suicide rate for women vets is 12 times that of their sisters in civilian life? Did you know that 1 in 4 women vets feel uncomfortable about talking to people about their mental health issues? Did you know almost 600,000 women vets in America are suffering from PTSD? It's time to help. It's time for all of us to encourage our sisters, mothers, and wives to get help by contacting their local VA hospital, clinic, or community-based health care center. So if you know a woman vet that is suffering, go to va.gov and find their nearest VA facility. This has been Dan Perkins of SongsAndStoriesForSoldiers.us with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am back. Thanks for staying with me through that very tiny break. Of course, Ron Edwards and Dan Perkins, regular guest here on the show, and always good to hear from them, even if it is just the veterans tip of the day. All right, another hot story today that I'm really not going to go into, and just a quick brief mention, just because of how ridiculous it is. Evidently, and I didn't realize this, I knew there were some places where this went on. I thought it was mostly in bigger cities and municipalities. But evidently in the state of Oregon, it has been illegal for drivers to pump their own gas. Now, like I said, I know in New Jersey, there were places, and in New York, they expected paid attendants to do it because they didn't want people to spill gasoline on the ground, blah, blah, blah. And then going into effect on the 1st, Oregon passed a new law stating that in counties with fewer than 40,000 citizens, I don't know how many counties that would actually affect. I think it was like 4 or 5 in the state of Oregon. They would no longer be required to have an attendant pump gas. Well, okay, so in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. In most places around the country, if you drive, you have pumped your own gas. Okay, not a problem. If you don't want to pump your own gas, you still have options. Only what you're going to see happen, especially as they continue to raise minimum wages in states like Oregon, is now that the stations themselves are going to have the option. If they're in a location where they don't have to pay attendants to pump gas for you, they're going to start leaving it up to you. So then you have a choice. If you do not, if you're so far above pumping your own gas, then you can drive over to a neighboring county. Chances are they still have the attendants in place. Or you can bring somebody with you when you need to fill up and just have them do it for you, one or the other. It should not be a life-altering thing. But some of the responses that were just all over social media, particularly Facebook and Twitter, classic. They're hilarious. I'm sure you guys have heard some of this by now. I mean, they were even talking about this on Sports Talk here locally. So obviously a lot of this you've heard. Just utterly ridiculous, but I can't help but think to myself how there are just a few places in the world, evidently Oregon is one of them, where something like this could possibly be an issue. And the folks in Oregon have no idea why the rest of the country is having so much fun at their expense right now. So just absolutely hilarious. Now, to one of the bigger stories that I wanted to touch on today. Germany now officially is fining social media sites for not deleting, in air quotes here, hate speech. And according to the way the law is set up, depending on the social media site involved, they can fine them up to roughly about $60 million U.S. currency. $60 million. So in Germany, social media sites can now be fined if they do not immediately delete hate speech or fake news from their platforms. And according to the Huffington Post, Germany's controversial Network Enforcement Act, also known as the NetzDG law, took effect again on the 1st of January, just a few days ago. The law requires that any internet platform, excuse me, I got the little frog trying to get into my throat again. The law requires that any internet platform with more than 2 million users must implement a system for both reporting and for scrubbing potentially illicit content, including threats of violence and, here's the harder one to establish, slander. Who do you think is going to be slandered the most and protected by these laws? Now, the sites will be given 24 hours or up to 7 days for legally complex cases. Not sure how they define that either, but up to 7 days in a legally complex case to delete the content after the user issues a complaint. Social media sites that do not comply will be fined up to $60 million, which of course raises the question, if the law were an earnest attempt to curtail hate speech, or is it just a cheap ruse to try and make some new revenue? At any rate, social media sites, including Facebook, Twitter, Google, YouTube, Snapchat, and Instagram, will all fall under the purview of the new law. Professional networks like LinkedIn, however, well, they're expressly excluded, as they're a messaging service like the WhatsApp. According to the local, Facebook hires several hundred people in Germany for this very law. Their jobs will be just plain and simple to review and delete illegal content. Facebook states that it will also increase their number of employees who review and delete content to 7,500 globally. That's a full 3,000 personnel increase just for the sake of censorship. Lawmakers in Germany have hailed the NetzDG law as an important measure to help companies fulfill their obligations. And maybe a little ironically, Germany's law comes on the heels of Facebook announcing that it will no longer be issuing a fake news flag, since it made people more likely to actually click on the content. Academic research on correcting misinformation has shown that putting a strong image, like a red flag, next to an article may actually entrench deeply held beliefs. The opposite effect to what we intended. That a quote from Facebook product manager Tessa Lyons. And she wrote that in a blog post this past week, about the same time that they announced it. Now, what I said when I shared this in social media is just a quick reminder. I mean, I shared this via Facebook. How ironic is that? And of course, over at teapartycommunity.com, did not hit it on Twitter today. But I want to remind everybody that before you dismiss this story, and it's real easy to dismiss a story like this because it's happening in Germany. You can't use Germany as a guidepost for what's happening here in the United States. What's happening in Europe will never come to the United States, right? How many of you don't know your history? So before you dismiss the story as far as where it's going and the companies involved, we really, really, really need to remind ourselves that every single leftist in this country and in our friends to the north in Canada, and most millennials who have been brainwashed, most of these people support this kind of government interference with free speech. They make the false claim that hate speech isn't protected speech, and they go on to classify anything that they disagree with as being hate speech. We've already seen this hundreds of thousands of times here in the U.S. Dang, excuse me, sorry. Now, as far as our friends in Canada are concerned, and Kel and Gary, who are in the chat room, I'll probably be more than happy to let you know. That this, they don't have a constitution that guarantees freedom of speech. We here in the States, we have a constitutional guarantee for freedom of speech. So they try and lawyer their way around it. And they're doing this in Canada already. They're crushing free speech. They're doing it in the UK. They're doing it in France. They're doing it in Germany, right here. Right here, we're talking about a law that just went into effect to stop social media from being able. But the leftists here in the States, they want to categorize anything they disagree with as being hate speech. I hate to hear something I disagree with. That makes it hate speech. And then they falsely try to tell you that hate speech isn't protected. What other kind of speech needs protection? See, the one thing that uber leftists who know exactly what they're doing takes advantage of young folks who haven't learned their history. They take advantage of that because there's not constructive criticism. There's not a real level at thinking. Critical thinking doesn't exist for these kids because they're not forced to critically think anymore. And so it's real easy to convince these millennials, it's real easy to convince the snowflakes that, you know, we're talking about white supremacists. Now, they say a lot of things that obviously you don't like. And unless you happen to be a white supremacist, you probably don't like the white supremacist message. So it's real easy to get conservatives and even libertarians on board with saying the white supremacist message is a terrible message. It's bad. It's easy to get that. So then it's real easy to get folks to start thinking, well, you know, if it's really that bad and it's so out of touch and it's so out of time and it's just so horrible, why should it be protected? But they don't know the simple facts that our founding fathers, our framers of our government, they didn't say or do anything that wasn't deliberate. They debated and argued and fought and even literally dueled on occasions over every placement of every comma, of every period, and every word. Because they knew a day would come where people would try to interpret what was being said instead of just reading what was being said. They knew that day would come. So our framers, our founding fathers were wise enough to say we need to protect speech. They didn't say that you could just say whatever you wanted without repercussions. They said you could speak freely, that you could have all the political speech you wanted without fear of retribution from the government. That is what our freedom of speech is actually designed to protect. But you do not have to protect. You do not need to protect something that people can agree on. If you can agree on something, it doesn't need to be protected. If I was to say to Kel, Justin Trudeau is a bad man. Here in the States, Kel would be allowed to agree with me. If I was to turn around and say, Kel, Justin Trudeau's the best thing to happen to Canada since sliced bread. Here in the States, Kel would be allowed to disagree with me. Gary would be allowed to call my show and give me what for, and probably would, or at least he should. But as long as we're agreeing, if we're both saying Justin Trudeau is a bad, bad person, that he's a waste of air, I can get as mean about it as I'd like to, and I'd still say that we'd probably still be in agreement. There's no reason why I should seek legal protection from Kel agreeing with me. I don't need protection from the NSA if Gary doesn't like what I'm saying. And Gary has not said anything yet, but Kel is saying that both Gary and Hurst could do it anyway, and because they're calling into the states that have that protection. The only problem is, guys, that they're trying to take that protection away from us. And it's working. They're moving incrementally. They've already done it on a lot of college campuses. That's what these safe spaces are about. That's why the Bureau of Land Management established a free speech zone when they were occupying the Bundys, or trying to anyway. It all still comes down to a very simple concept. Freedom of speech is bad for leftists. If you're a statist, if you believe in socialism, you believe in communism, you believe in no individual liberty, you believe that the state is the ultimate authority, then freedom of speech is bad in your mind. There is no two ways about it. The only thing that you can utilize free speech for is when you're trying to argue for your side, when you're trying to change a country that doesn't embrace your ideology. So we cannot and we should not look the other way when we see stories about how Germany now is willing to fine companies up to $60 million if they can't get a post removed in 24 hours. I really would like to know their definition of up to 7 days in more complicated legal cases. I would imagine that means somebody's actually willing to fight and stand up for their freedom of speech. And again, it does get kind of messy on social media anyway, because there are some little things that the social media sites kind of have in their back pocket, their user agreements. Legally, they put in, if you're going to participate on our platforms, we do have a right to censor you to a certain degree. But that should be up to the platform. If YouTube wants to pull off videos that I've posted, then that should be up to YouTube to do. The government should not be stepping in and fining them for not doing it. That should be between me and the company. All right, Kel, I will definitely get with you sometime soon. Let me know a good time to give you a call, and I'll give you a Skype. Taking care of some personal business there on the air. Sorry. We don't need to be looking the other way. We need to pay attention. We need to be watching what's going on. And we need, here in the States, we need to be pushing back. We need to be taking back our freedom of speech, and we need to be helping our friends to the north and our friends across the pond to reclaim their liberties. They don't have the same protections in place. The protections we have aren't enough anymore. We have leftists that are trying to destroy freedom. We need to lead the way. Here in the United States, we need to be a vocal voice, and we need to be standing up for our friends that aren't fortunate enough to be Americans. And by that, all I mean is that they're not fortunate enough to have the same protections. Because you know what, Kel, Gary, they love Canada, and they should. They're Canadians. If you don't love Canada, get out of Canada. They're in Canada because they love it. They should. We all in this chat room, I'm pretty sure, I know at least most of us, we have friends in the UK. I have some friends in France, and I have a few friends in Germany. I have a few friends in Japan. I don't worry about my friends in Japan, but I am deeply concerned about the well-being and the direction things are going in Europe. We need to be supportive. We need to be there for them, and we need to be prepared. And, you know, Kel actually has done a fantastic job of that. Kel has traveled to the UK to stand with some of our friends over there. She's done a fantastic job. Annie, who's still in the chat room, she's been very vocal on this on multiple occasions. We just can't afford to look the other way, especially when you turn around and you see some of these same companies helping the Iranian regime. we have another attempt by the Iranian people to seek freedom. They're protesting on the streets, and there's been another crackdown. And these same companies, these social media companies in particular, are helping the Iranian regime spy on activists. They're helping them to squash communications getting outside of Iran. They're trying to keep everything contained so that they can come in and crush the resistance. So we need to keep that in mind too. And we need to have very frank conversations with these social media sites, because, you know, I'm not sponsored by them, but I stand up and I'll promote and I'll mention teapartycommunity.com every chance I get when it just comes up. We need to let the social media platforms know that we're just as concerned about social issues as our more vocal left-leaning friends. And in our minds, social issues include liberty, the promotion of freedom around the world, honest to goodness, real feminism, not this fake jacked up third wave feminism that the leftists are pushing, but the advancement of women. You don't see that in Muslim dominated nations, do we? We don't see homosexuals able to walk safely down the streets of Iran. We might see them hanging off the sides of buildings, or we might see them falling off of the sides of buildings from where they've been pushed. Freedom, liberty. That's a social issue that the world should be embracing. So let's pay attention. Let's not let this story go away, and let's not let the Iranian story go away, because there's a lot of folks that just, they don't seem to be getting it. There's a lot of folks that seem to be missing the whole concept. They want to get along. They want to save the world. But they don't seem to care enough to want to save people. What's the matter with saving people? I mean, we're literally living in a country where the Mueller grand jury ends up looking like a Bernie Sanders rally. I mean, this grand jury that Mueller has put together, he's done this so he can get subpoena power. He didn't have the authority to subpoena anyone until he could seat a grand jury. So he seats a grand jury in the District of Columbia. Why in the District of Columbia? Because he knows in the District of Columbia there is, I think it's about a 96-97% Democrat body of people. I mean, it's a very solid Democrat, folks. So chances are you're going to be able to seat a grand jury filled with people that hate Donald Trump. Chances are you're going to have a ethnic and racially diverse group large enough of people that have bought into the Democratic lies that Donald Trump is a racist and a bigot. You're going to have enemies of Donald Trump. I mean, there were people that were being seated on this grand jury wearing peace T-shirts, according to witnesses. That story was floating around today, if you missed it. We've got Nikki Haley having to stand up and tell people we cannot be silent about what's going on in Iran. And yet everyone else at the UN still wants to talk about how bad Donald Trump is for recognizing Jerusalem as the freaking capital of Israel. Sorry that we took the time to recognize some truth. Jerusalem has been the capital of Israel for a while now. It's not a new development. Didn't happen just last year. Didn't happen just a decade ago. We're talking thousands of years. Thousands. Biblically speaking, it has been recognized as the capital for a while. Meanwhile, there are innocent citizens that are protesting a theocracy that's brutal, and everyone looks the other way. We're still too busy complaining about Donald Trump and Jerusalem. Sorry. All right, shifting gears again real quick. And here we're getting back to a – I'm going to try to sneak an extra story after this one in real quick too. If I can, I will. I'm going to try. We're getting back to the back to the culture war segment. It seems like I can't do anything that's not culture war related anymore. And I'm not complaining. A lot of the culture war stories are more fun to talk about. You get a chance to really express some stuff and show how ridiculous the folks on the other side are. But in this particular case, here's a headline that just, it reached out and it made me want to shake everyone involved. Seems that there's a health foundation that is hard at work trying to help Black Lives Matter spread their anti-cop message. The California Endowment, which is actually one of the largest health foundations in the United States, they're helping BLM amplify its anti-police sentiment by donating a full-page newspaper ad to the group's Sacramento chapter. Here's a quote. Quote, Endowment had the ad space and used it for us. This according to Tanya Fashion, who's the founder of the Black Lives Matter Sacramento area. The advertisement was published back in the December 21st edition of the Sacramento News Review, an alternative weekly based in California's capital. It featured images depicting two men who died while in police custody in separate incidents back in May of last year, claiming that both were killed by local sheriff deputies. Not that they died while in custody, but that they were killed by deputies. We're talking about Mikel McIntyre, who was fatally shot during a scuffle with several law enforcement officers. While officials reported that Ryan Ellis's death resulted from critical injuries sustained after jumping from a moving patrol car while handcuffed. Police accounts of both events have been questioned by family members and by Black Lives Matter activists, of course. And we're keeping in mind that while there may be a few good people here and there that have just bought into the BLM crap, for the most part, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization. Now, the California Endowment portrays itself as a healthcare foundation on a mission to expand access to affordable, quality healthcare for underserved individuals and communities, and to promote fundamental improvements in the health status of all Californians. Sorry, I thought Obamacare was supposed to take care of all of that. Once Obamacare was passed, why didn't the California Endowment just disappear? Their work was done, right? Anyway, they portray themselves as a healthcare foundation on a mission. However, it funds many of the same organizations and drives, which are also financed by George Soros and his Open Society Foundation that, of course, seek to dismantle American institutions like policing and prisons, just as one example. You know, George. California Endowment's website elaborates on its strategy, saying, quote, "We don't focus on prescriptions. We focus on fixing broken systems and outdated policies, ensuring the balance of power is with the people. We don't focus on the individual." Of course they don't. They're a collectivist group, aren't they? Anyway, I'm sorry. We focus on the larger community as an ecosystem of health. We work with citizens and elected leaders to find lasting solutions to impact the most people we possibly can. So in 2010, the endowment launched a 10-year, $1 billion initiative to advance statewide policy to change the narrative and transform 14 of California's communities devastated by health inequalities, including South Los Angeles, East Oakland, and Sacramento. Now, many of those funds have been allocated to groups allied with Black Lives Matter, connecting causes like criminal justice reform and inequality to health and wellness. Dr. Robert K. Ross, the CEO and president of the California Endowment, once penned an editorial stating that he was, quote, thrilled to see more momentum behind the Black Lives Matter movement, even linking it to the official site of the Black Lives Matter global network. Now, Black Lives Matter, the California Endowment, embraces the concept of intersectionality, which of course joins and leverages different progressive efforts into the collective force, working together to topple the systems that they say keep people oppressed. You know, all that white privilege and stuff that most of us are still trying to figure out where we go to cash in on our white privilege card. The endowment and many affiliated organizations, are actively publicizing a, quote, raise up as one campaign. And of course, this is intended to encourage groups identifying as marginalized, such as, you know, unlawfully present immigrants. That's the new PC term, unlawfully present. It's not undocumented anymore. It's unlawfully present immigrants, transgender right activists, and of course, Black Lives Matter revolutionaries. You know, join them all together. They're trying to get them to kind of coalesce. Billboards have sprung up throughout California, in fact, and the Rise Up as One logo is also displayed on the full-page print ad recently dedicated to Black Lives Matter. Day after the publication, Black Lives Matter in Sacramento's lead organizer took to Facebook to reaffirm her stance on public safety, which includes a call for the abolition of the police by, and I quote, any means necessary. See, the problem is these folks really, really, really would like no police, because they would like to be undocumented shoppers the next time a hurricane comes through. Of course, these folks are in California, so I guess the next time a typhoon comes through, next time there's an earthquake, next time there's any debacle. It seems to me that even the legislative bodies in the state of California, as whacked out and far left as they tend to be, would have a vested interest in at the very least questioning the tax-exempt status of a foundation such as the endowment, the California Endowment, if it is claiming that it is all about health. I'm pretty sure that the federal legal standards for organizations like this, for foundations, require them, if they're going to have a tax-exempt status of their own, requires them to file paperwork, to have this paperwork routinely reaffirmed. Kel says that she should have already had her Miranda rights read to her. But you see, unfortunately, that's kind of where we have to take the good with the bad, Kel. Again, freedom of speech allows this silly individual to say silly things like that. Now, I'm trying not to be too mean about it. Part of my New Year's resolutions, I'm trying to be a kinder, gentler host. I don't think it's going to last too long, but I'm trying. I plan to get through at least 1 week. But this silly person with these silly ideas, she offered money. She gets to say stuff like this, but at the end of the day, the IRS has a job to do. And as much as I didn't like it when the IRS was weaponized against Tea Party organizations during Barack Hussein Ali Akbar's presidency, during Miss Lois Lerner's tenure as the top dog at the IRS, I also don't like it when the IRS goes the other way and looks the other way when it comes to organizations and foundations like the Clinton Foundation, and obviously in the case of this, the California Endowment, because they're required to tell you the purposes of the organization and what they're doing. They're required to tell you when they change their focus and change where their money is going to. And they are also required to still maintain these statutes to maintain their intentions that something that is recognized as legal to be tax exempt. I have a hard time believing anywhere that it's legal to spread hate towards police officers. I mean, it still comes down to this one simple fact, boys and girls. Are there bad police? Yeah, there are some bad people out there in every job that you can find. But the overwhelming majority of police officers are good men and women doing the best they can, usually with their hands tied by bureaucrats and politically spineless morons that have authority and power over their budgets. This world would be a much uglier place without police officers. And yes, police officers should be held to a high standard because they have a very difficult job that could be very easily twisted into an abusive circumstance. So they should be held to a high standard. But the thing is that most police officers hold themselves to that high standard. Most police officers, and again, I say most because, yes, there are exceptions, but I will give the benefit of the doubt to the police officer every time until you give me a reason not to. And even if they're being a bit sharp or harsh, usually that's because people have treated them with disrespect. And they're worthy of respect. No, I have not seen that yet, Kel. Yes, I'm having a conversation with folks in the chat room. And if you're one of the people that listens but never gets into the chat room, this is one of those reasons why you should be in the chat room with all these folks. You've got Child of God, you've got Gary, you've got Kel, you've got Annie, you've got Boyd, who are all still here. Everybody else has kind of moved on for one reason or another. Mary has not hopped in tonight. My guess is Mary probably checked on me earlier, and because of the late start, she probably moved on thinking I wasn't going to be on. You know, COG makes a great point right there. You know, I talk about how most police officers are genuinely good people doing a thankless, many times horrible job. And they do this in an effort to serve their fellow man. But COG says, well, not on TV. And I'll go you one better, not in most movies either. Hollywood and the mainstream media has a lot to do with trying to paint this terrible picture of law enforcement in this country. And, you know, it's a shame. If you see television from the 70s and even as late as early to mid 80s, the cops were the good guys. Somewhere in the 80s and then all throughout the 90s and so forth to the 2000s, the cops suddenly became the bad guys. Even the good cops are bad guys. But again, that's TV. Hollywood, it's mass media, it's social engineering. It's trying to get young people to buy into crap like it's being sold from folks like Black Lives Matter. These people are not happy about what's going on in their neighborhoods because it's dangerous in their neighborhoods. There are neighborhoods in this country that are worse than war zones around the world. But the reason they're that bad isn't because there's bad police. It's because police officers are taken out of those areas, or only a few are allowed in. We need to re-embrace the police, and we need to have their backs, and we need to let them know that we love them and appreciate them. And we need to give them the support they need to go in and police some of these other neighborhoods so that some of these young folks that are being taken in by folks like Black Lives Matter can actually see the truth about them. And that these are people who care about their communities, care about their neighborhoods, normally live in the same ones that they patrol and protect. And that to protect and serve isn't just something on the side of a car. It's something that they believe in, that they're willing to die for, because they know every time they put on the uniform, there's a chance that could happen before they come home. The shooting in Dallas during the Black Lives Matter protests is one of the greatest examples. It should have ended Black Lives Matter. There should have been no more Black Lives Matter after the Dallas shooting. Police officers taking bullets to protect protesters. Protesters that were there protesting them. I'm sorry, chuckling over at the chat room. One of our chat room members had to call the cops on their neighbors a couple of nights ago. Had a great response time. And that's fantastic. Sometimes I will book late because I try to be flexible when I think there's a story brewing. But like today's show, I actually had booked yesterday. I was still hoping there was a chance I was going to have a guest on tonight, and then they backed out last second. Yeah, I actually spent some time talking to the BTR folks today about what happened to the last broadcast where I went dead for nearly 40 minutes on the airtime. Still being told that's on my end. But they're actually investigating because, as Mary points out, that if you call in and listen, you don't get those intermittent audio blasts. So they didn't have an explanation for that, so they'll be looking into it. Just update the description. Okay, Kel, okay. I will do better, I promise. And I tend to agree with Gary on this one, though. It would be nice to see a schedule of all shows approved by Kel. I guarantee you, you would not be disappointed. All right. So anyway, how does an organization like the California Endowment continue to operate given that they're obviously sending out an anti-police message. How is it that they're allowed to continue to hold their position as an endowment if they're busy doing other things? I mean, they're obviously not into healthcare. I mean, plain and simple, you are getting yourself thrown in with a group that is trying to teach you to go kill police. I mean, that, and I know there's a lot of people claim that that's not a true statement. You're lying. That's not true. Fake news, fake news. But we have quotes from several national and state chapter leaders of Black Lives Matter saying exactly that. Now, they always say it in a different way, but they're always talking about how cops need to go and no more police, any means necessary. Well, you think that means roll up beside them and offer them a box of donuts if they'll walk away from the job? No, it means whatever you got to do to get rid of them. When they say any means necessary, that's a whole lot there. And if that's not what they mean, they need to clarify. Now, I can sit here and I can say things and I can exaggerate and I can make it as big and as vague as I want to. But at the end of the day, if I'm saying something that sounds like I'm sanctioning the murder of someone because I disagree with them or don't like the job they do, then I need to clarify. When I say we need to stand up and fight for what we believe in, I need to make sure before I go off the air that I'm making it clear that I'm talking about fighting in the arena of ideas. I am not suggesting that we should load up our weapons and start an armed revolution in the streets. I am afraid that someday that might be what becomes necessary, but I don't believe we're there yet. So when I say stand up and fight, I'm talking about being heard and being loud, pushing back against these loudmouth morons with the squishy minds who tend to melt down whenever you push back, aka snowflakes. And one of the ways that we can do that, here in the last real quick story that I'm going to try and sneak in, is supporting people for political office that ordinarily in the past would have been terrible candidates. Not because they would have been a terrible candidate, but because we know they won't play the same game that career politicians have. As a quick example, you guys remember the Muslim free zone gun range owner? She's going to be running for governor now. The woman out in Arkansas who refused to train next to Islamic terrorists, to train the next Islamic terrorist, I should say, is going to bring, quote, a new day for Arkansas. Now, she made national headlines a little while back for refusing to train the next Islamic terrorist. That's exactly how she put it. And now she's running for governor to bring a new day for Arkansas. Right before the 2017 came to an end, Jan Morgan, the owner of Gun Cave Indoor Firing Range, the same one who back in 2014 stirred up controversy by declaring her range a Muslim-free zone, well, she announced via video that she's throwing her hat into the ring against incumbent Republican Governor Hutchinson. Morgan's announcement, she blasts the skeptics who've doubted the people of her state. She slams the establishment politicians for overtaxing, overregulating, and enslaving citizens with entitlements, and expresses optimism about the future of her state. In the election, she'll be facing off against Hutchinson, who won the governorship back in 2014. The same year that Morgan gained her national attention by posting a message on social media declaring that her range was officially a Muslim-free zone. And as the Kansas City Star reported, Morgan's policy came under the scrutiny not just of civil liberty groups, including the controversial pro-Islamic activist group CARE, but also the U.S. Department of Justice, which said they were keeping an eye on her establishment in 2015. Now, as might be expected, guns appear to be among the top campaigning issues for Morgan, who has become one of the most vocal advocates for furthering Second Amendment rights, including open carry laws. Morgan has become an analyst for Fox News, where she's been brought on to address a range of hot button topics. And now, after proudly proclaiming herself to be one of the members of the basket of deplorables, she's decided she's going to challenge the Republican governor. I don't know enough about Jan Morgan to say that she's going to be a great governor or is a great candidate or should be voted for, but I do know that people like her may very well be the answer. Because if you can get rid of the career politicians and go back to having just people stepping up and serving a term and then going back to their lives the way these offices were intended to be in the first place, maybe we'll see the work of the people being done and the influence and power of the parties gradually go away. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I probably ought to leave things there for tonight. Thank you very much for being here. Again, quick shout out to Annie Ubellis of Southern Sense. Thanks for being here tonight, Annie. Have a great night. Also to Boyd the Alaskan and Alaskan Child of God. My Canadian friends, Kel and Gary, I Scott Game. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Always great to have you in there. And as far as everybody else that was here earlier, the folks who popped in and popped out, any of the guests who were actually just popping in and not having trouble signing in because of the continued BTR issues, welcome. And for all you guys that are listening to the show later, whether you're catching this in the archives here at BTR or listening over at Spreaker or Stitcher or Tuned In or over at iTunes or wherever you catch the show, once again, thank you very much for being here. And most importantly, remember how I close it all out each and every time. Don't take my word for it. Definitely. Definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, put in some work. Be ready to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Going to change things up a little bit tonight. Going to play a little more Matt Fitzgibbons as we sign out. The rain is coming. Everybody, if you can, stay warm out there. It's hard for a lot of us right now. I will see you guys Sunday, or at least as many of you who choose to join me. And in the meanwhile, have a great rest of your week. I'm out.
Seems like a thousand years since we had real fears, but the old ones won't forget. These broken levee walls had a few close calls, but they haven't fallen yet. And you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it brings a storm on you. When the sun beats down and it bakes the ground, you watch the rich land die. Such a vicious drought, even hope's in doubt. But there are no clouds in the sky. But you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it
when you feel the first drop fall. When it kisses your skin, the storm will begin to bring with it promise of change. When you hear the thunder roll, the lightning's begun, the flood will soon come to wash out the things that remain. Storm on you because the rain.